Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Sox Maniacs Podcast.
Hello, Red Sox fans. Welcome to the Red Sox Maniacs Podcast. This is Brandon. I have on the line with me here today Deacon Art. Hello, Deacon. Deacon, you're out there? Welcome to the Red Sox Maniacs Podcast. This is Brandon. I have here with me Deacon Art. Deacon, you there? Deacon, are you there?
I'm here, Brandon.
All right. Hey, Deacon, welcome to the show. Had a few technical difficulties there to start with, but I think we're good now.
I think we're all set to roll.
All right. So we sit here the day before the All-Star break. Sox are 42-46, 5.5 games out of first. At the end of today, they'll be either 4.5 or 6.5 heading into All-Star break. Obviously a key game with the Yankees this afternoon. I thought we'd start maybe, Art, with your overall thoughts in the first half of the season.
Well, I mean, no question, you have to chalk up in its entirety as a disappointment. I mean, you did not, with this team coming out of Florida in April, you never would have expected to be in last place, no matter the number of games behind, come the All-Star break. That being said, they have shown some signs of life, finally, the last couple of weeks or so. As you said, today's a really crucial game for a lot of reasons, but one kind of little off-the-wall reason. If they beat the Yankees today, I believe it'll be the fourth team in the last, let's say 3 weeks or so, since they've picked up the pace, the fourth first-place team that they would have taken a series from. Tampa Bay was in first place when they played them. They've taken a series from Kansas City, one from Houston, and now they could take one today from the Yankees. So not only have they picked up the pace a bit, it's not that they've been beating up on, poor teams. They've actually been playing some of the better teams in the American League.
Right, and this current hot streak has actually kind of muddied the waters in terms of their overall plan for 2015. A few weeks ago, it looked like they were definitely going to be sellers heading into the trade deadline, and they'd at least have some clarity. Now they've sort of climbed back into the fringes of the AL East race, but they had dug themselves such a big hole to start with that now, Benny C. and the rest of the guys in the war room have to decide, what are we going to be for the rest of the year? Are we going to try to go all in and acquire more talent to really make a push to get back in to try to win the AL East? We're still in last place. Is it sell off a couple assets and see what the young guys can do and try to stay in contention that way?
Well, I think it's funny. The beginning of the answer to that question, I really truly think, is today. I mean, it's really quite a large difference if they go into the All-Star break 4.5 games behind or 6.5 games behind. I mean, neither of those numbers on the face of it are insurmountable, but of course they're also still in last place. With to win the division, they would have to climb over four teams. So if they win today, they could be within a game of Toronto and Tampa Bay, depending on how those two teams do today. They sit here this morning at two games behind those two teams and only 2.5 behind Baltimore. So to gain another game on first place and potentially on a couple of those other teams today would really be important. I mean, to go into the All-Star break 6.5 games behind every other team in the division just is a much bigger hill to climb than the 4.5 would be, which still in and of itself, because they're going to be in fifth place no matter what happens there, because they're two games out of fourth. So they're going into the All-Star break in last place, but it's certainly, the 4.5 seems like a less insurmountable number. Plus, losing today would kind of take a little bit of the air out of the balloon that's been created the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely. And to your point, the Minnesota Twins are 4.5 games out of first place right now, but they're in second place in their division, so it's just that one team ahead of them that they're trying to track down, whereas the Red Sox have to leapfrog over four teams to get into first place. And, you know, if even if the Sox manage to put together, you know, another 10 or 12 game stretch like they had the last 10 or 12, you know, there's no telling that, you know, the Blue Jays might not do the same thing, or the Rays, or the Orioles, or the Yankees, making it that much more difficult for them to climb up. And again, looking at the AL East, and not just the AL East, but the whole American League standings heading into the All-Star break, it looks like, you know, whoever wants to make the playoffs from the AL East is going to have to win the division. Right now, the Yankees lead the division with 47 wins, and if the season ended today, the Twins would be in the first wild card spot, and the Angels would be tied with the Yankees for that second wild card spot. So, you know, I guess it's possible, depending on what happens in the second half, that two AL East teams may make the playoffs, especially with the Astros free fall in the second half, like they might. But it's looking like you're probably going to have to win the division to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that kind of circles back to your point you made a moment ago about Ben Cherington and decisions for the trade deadline. I think today, you know, starts that process again, because winning today puts them that much closer to being in the race. But there are a couple different theories floating around out there, and I believe both of them. The first is, because of this uncertainty, the Red Sox may very well wait right up until the 30th or 31st of July before they kind of decide. You know, they to me would have to get back to within being a game or two out of first place by the end of the month to jump in on one of the so-called rentals, you know, the Johnny Cuetos of the world, you know, those type of free agents to be this winter. And unless they actually, you know, charge to within that game or so of the top, I don't think that's the route they're going to go. Rob Bradford, for one, has had some columns recently saying that his sources tell him with the Red Sox are hoping to acquire someone at the deadline that they would control, you know, beyond this year, and maybe younger pitching than this crop of free agents to be are out there. And I agree with that also. I you know, whether they can pull that off and whether there's actually a person out there that fits that mold, I think that's what they're probably looking for. I still don't necessarily think they'll be going. I certainly don't think they'll be going for one of the rental guys. And you know, the biggest name, of course, that we've heard ad nauseum for a non-rental guy would be Cole Hamels. And I'm still not convinced they want to go that route either. They may, but I'm still not convinced.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are the not quite upper echelon rental guys? You know, not the Cuetos or whoever that. But you know, I thought for a while. And Billy Beane is kind of known to pull the trigger on trades earlier than the deadline to try to get out in front of the market heading up to the deadline. And, you know, they have Scott Kazmir available. I thought for a while now that the Red Sox might be interested in him behind the scenes. He is a rental guy. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. He had a little minor arm issue this past week, I guess, but news reports are that he's fine. He's going to make his next start. Do you think that's a guy they'd be interested in at all, or do you think, like you said, they're not going to give up any prospects for a guy like Kazmir who they won't have past this year, especially if they might not even be able to make it back in the race fully anyway?
Right. Well, I think there's a few different components to the Kazmir question. His health is one, but where he is a free agent at the end of the year, you're not talking like the Phillies continually asking for the Blake Swihart and, you know, Mookie Betts of the world for Hamels. You're not talking about that kind of prospect for someone who, you know, you're renting for 2 months. I mean, I don't think you even would be talking necessarily one of the Red Sox top four or five prospects. It would be more like a guy below the Sea Dogs level, a couple of those perhaps. See, I think Kazmir would be a guy they'd have some interest in. And, of course, that equation, are they interested in that type of guy? May very well, the answer to that may have changed two nights ago when Clay Buchholz walked off the mound not being able to finish the game against the Yankees.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. So, I mean, when it came out that he had elbow tightness, you know, that's almost automatic code word these days for he's going to have Tommy John surgery. Now, reports are that the MRI showed no structural damage, not even a partial tear in his elbow ligament. So it looks like we've avoided, you know, going down that road of Tommy John surgery for now. But even still, you know, this puts him on the DL, this sets him back. And Buchholz had been going so well, and he had talked openly about feeling so great physically, but having, you know, control of all of his pitches, his full repertoire. He was really peak Clay Buchholz recently. And even if he comes back from a short DL stint and structurally he's fine, if it takes him a few weeks to kind of get that feel back for all of his pitches, you might be that up and down, you know, not so good Clay Buchholz anymore. And you know, they can't afford to have bad Clay Buchholz in their rotation if they're going to get back in the playoff hunt.
Right. I mean, if he's out any period of time, or like you said, if he comes back in effectually, they've got issues. There's no question. And if he doesn't come back, as we were talking about a moment ago, before July 31st, I mean, that certainly they've got to bring in some type of pitcher. You would think. But you know, currently they said last night that maybe by the end of the day today, there'd be a little bit better picture on the time he's going to be out. Of course, obviously now it's 2 weeks, 15 days, because they did put him on the DL. If it turned out that he actually could be back in 2 weeks, they catch some sort of a break, because you know most of next week is off for the All-Star break. So they would not like they would miss two full weeks of the season. But the thing that I've read that they were talking about trying to come up with a comparison or you know a guesstimate as how much time he may miss. Last night, one of the Boston reporters pointed to Doug Fister of the Nationals, missed time earlier this year with that same, I believe they're calling it a flexor muscle strain, and Fister did not have the UCL damage, the same as Buchholz apparently does not, and they said he missed just over a month, Fister, that is. So
I thought for a moment we had seen the last pitch that Clay Buchholz ever throws in a Red Sox uniform there the other night, but hopefully it looks like that won't be the case, but it does, you know, ramp up the question of, okay, what do they do now in this rotation? So they have, you know, Edwin Rodriguez, you know, humming along, you know, was great again yesterday. They've got Wade Miley going along pretty well. You know, and Porcello is still going to be in the rotation for now, I guess, although he's been terrible, putrid, pick your adjective. Who gets those other two spots heading out of the All-Star break? They called up Brian Johnson, right? So it looks
right.
Like they're going to audition him for one of the spots.
Yep, he gets the first crack at one of them, it looks like, for sure.
And so that fifth Masterson's on the roster already. Do they go back with Masterson, or do they try to leave him the bullpen, you think?
That's a really good question. My early suspicion would be they would prefer maybe to leave him in the bullpen because, I mean, there's still a chance in one-inning, two-inning stints that Masterson, you know, not only, let's say, he does not deserve to be in rotation, he's been, quote-unquote, demoted to the bullpen, but the flip side of that coin is he may be one of the pieces they need in that bullpen. As Brandon, as you have been exposing all year, and it turns out to be very correctly, you know, if you set aside maybe Koji and Tozawa, the rest of the bullpen just doesn't have it, and it's possible that Masterson could be a bigger plus to this team out of the bullpen than the rotation. But if that does turn out to be true, that means we sit here currently this morning with the two rookies, Rodriguez, Johnson, Porcello, and Miley, as the four guys. So you've got to have at least one more. Steven Wright's made a couple of starts. I guess he would be a possibility. Joe Kelly's back down to Pawtucket, but I think he also, there's been a lot of talk the last few days that they may turn to him as one of the possible auditioners, a solution for the bullpen. So that just leads to, you know, there's certainly a possibility. I mean, you could say that Johnson's coming up to replace Buchholz, but they were going to need to recall another starter after the All-Star break because of last week's days off. They were going basically with a four-man rotation since they had moved Masterson to the bullpen. So they needed another starter even before the Buchholz thing.
Yeah, which leads me to believe that, you know, I think Benny C might try awful hard over this All-Star break to acquire a pitcher. You know, maybe it's not going to be the headline deal with Cole Hamels or Johnny Cueto or whoever, but somebody, you know, some starting pitcher to plug into that rotation, and soon. You know, you mentioned the bullpen, Art. It's definitely been a sore spot with me all season long. It reared its ugly head again Friday night. You know, as soon as I watched the John Farrell turn around to the dugout and you could read his lips and say, "Ross, get Ross," I'm thinking, oh, crap, this game's done. This game's over with. And, of course, it exactly played out that way. You know, Benny C put this bullpen together in the offseason with Robbie Ross, with Anthony Barbaro, with Edward Mujica, with Craig Breslow, and it's just been terrible. You know, it's just been terrible, and they haven't really, outside of Matt Barnes, done anything to address it. So I obviously hope and pray that the time is now, coming out of the All-Star break, that they get Masterson out there, that they get Joe Kelly out there, that they get maybe Pat Light called up and out there, and maybe try to, you know, trade and acquire another bullpen arm or two as well. What do you think?
I mean, there's no question it needs to be addressed. I mean, before Buchholz was hurt, I would say that it needed to be addressed more than any other thing. You know, the starting pitching may be right there with it now, head and head. But yes, and there are different options. You mentioned Pat Light. He's hit a little bit of a bump in the road since he's come up to Pawtucket. He's had a couple of kind of rough outings. He walked four or five guys in an outing the other night. But he's still somebody who could help before the year's over. But I think, you know, there are guys who could be acquired at the deadline. You know, I mean, there are always middle relief guys available, number one. There are some pretty big fish out there if he wanted to go that route. I mean, of course, Papelbon's basically there for the taking of his contract from Philadelphia. I guess the issue there would be, would either he or Koji agree to, if that's the right way to put it, you know, not being the closer, or would there be a, you know,
right,
emotional or mental, you know, roadblock, whichever one of them maybe was given the eighth inning. But there are closers, there are big-name closers potentially available. The Padres, another team that, you know, won the winter, all those deals last winter, but then they've played badly. There's been a lot of talk, increasing talk the last week or so, that Craig Kimbrell, who they acquired from the Braves right on opening day, just about might be available. There's some talk, of course, the Reds maybe looking to have a, you know, big sale after they host the All-Star game this week, and there's some talk that at least Aroldis Chapman would be available. K-Rod, Francisco Rodriguez from the Brewers, who is a name that you mentioned, Brandon, a month or two ago. So, I mean,
yeah,
those guys
I wrote a post
are all available.
For him. I think it was back in mid-May that I wrote a post begging them to trade for K-Rod. You know,
right,
as of today, I'm looking at his stats right now. He's got a 1.41 ERA. He's got a 0.87 whip. He's got a 10.4 K per nine innings, and he's got 19 saves with a bad Milwaukee Brewers team. I mean,
right,
and you got to think that's a guy he signed for this year and next. I mean, that's a guy that would be an immediate huge upgrade at the back end of that bullpen. Might have some of the same kind of issues you talked about with Papelbon, as, you know, he's been a closer for several years now. He's actually moving up the all-time save list, A-Rod is, so I'm not sure he'd want to come in and be a setup guy. So there might be an issue there, but you know, I think they've got to pull the trigger if they're really serious about getting back into the playoff hunt, because keep on trotting out, you know, Robbie Ross, and keep on trotting out Breslow and Tommy Lane even, and all these guys. It's not going to happen. You know, I don't see any of them turning it around and being able to shut down teams in big games and big situations. And yeah, Koji and Taz have been great, but I mean, their arms are going to fall off. We use them every time we're ahead in the game. Not only that, but heading into the second half in the games against the AL East teams, I mean, how many times have these AL East teams seen Tozawa and Koji now? I mean, how comfortable are those hitters against those two pitchers? You know, I see their effectiveness against our AL East opponents kind of diminishing as the rest of the season goes on.
And there was some talk, you mentioned the lefties, the three lefties, who none of really have been, I mean, I guess Lane's been the closest one to being effective at times, but, you know, none of them really have been very effective. And there was a lot of talk a month or so ago, it's died down some. I think Nick Cafardo was leading the charge of, you know, did the Red Sox make a mistake in not going, you know, all out for Andrew Miller over Koji, or just getting Miller no matter what the cost, which to me, that's kind of like that horse has left the barn. It's pointless talking about it. They're not going to get Andrew Miller. But what I would like to be able to have the Red Sox do, and I can't attach a name to this, but they found Andrew Miller on the scrap heap a couple, 3 years ago. What they need to do is go and find another Andrew Miller, or something at least closely resembling another Andrew Miller, on somebody else's scrap heap. You know, that's what they, those are the kind of guys who often come in and fix middle relief. They aren't necessarily, you know, big-name guys. I mean, Ben Cherington's actually had either, you would either say, a poor record or poor luck in acquiring name relief pitchers. You know, Handrahan, Andrew Bailey, and on and on.
Mark Melanson.
Mark Melanson, you know, who now has gone back to being an all-star closer, you know, now that he's moved on again. So, you know, they need
to. And even Andrew Miller took a couple years to get back to being Andrew Miller that we know now. I mean, he was erratic, wild, all over the place for a couple of years when they first acquired him. So, you know, sometimes it takes time for those guys to grow into effective major league relief pitchers. So I want to move back, though, and talk about this Yankees series in particular. Do you have any thoughts or observations as you've watched these two games this weekend about these two teams, or about how they match up, or just kind of any themes that are developing as you watch these games this weekend?
Well, to me, it's one of the things that's kind of frustrating to the really poor Red Sox first half of the season up until the last couple of weeks, because I really don't think there's a lot of difference between those two teams or any of the other teams in the American League East for that matter. But talking about the Red Sox and Yankees in particular, I think there's very little difference between the two teams. The Yankee rotation has got lots of question marks as well. They were lauding the fact that Tanaka and Sabathia actually won back-to-back starts for them this year, but both of those guys seem to be hanging on by a thread health-wise. I think their best pitcher by far, starting pitcher, is Pineda, who pitched pretty well there Friday night. He's had some health issues himself over the years. So I really think, the Red Sox offense did not produce for most of the first half, but it seems to be kind of clicking better as this hot streak has gone along. I don't think there's a lot of difference offensively. Let me back up. There's obviously one difference, and we're going to go back around to the same subject. The difference is the Yankees with Betanis and Miller are completely, totally lights out in the eighth and ninth inning. If you're going to beat them, you better be leading them after seven. That's the one difference the two teams have.
And even the seventh inning, Cashman is getting lucky on a couple of those middle relief guys that you talked about Gerrington being unlucky with. Justin Wilson and a couple of these other guys that Cashman has acquired have kind of hit and been really good this year, whereas the Red Sox gambles have been terrible and have flamed out.
Right.
But definitely the back end of that bullpen, watching the series, and you think about John Henry's comments earlier this year about how baseball where baseball is headed in terms of roster construction, in terms of approach, and how the Red Sox may have still been at that point subscribing to what is now almost an old-fashioned approach of working starting pitchers, pitch counts, and getting into teams' bullpens and being really patient. I think that talks to sort of the Kansas City Royals type of baseball and their roster construction and the success they've had the last 2 years, which, pitching-wise, they throw together kind of whoever in their pitching staff, Edison Volquez and Chris Young and Jeremy Guthrie and, whoever to give them the first four, five, six innings of the game. And then they come in with lights-out bullpen pitchers. But offensively also, they have this philosophy of swing the bats, don't strike out, and run like hell. And that's also something that kind of the Red Sox have decided to zig while other teams are zagging that way. You watch what Ellsbury and Brett Gardner are able to do at the top of the Yankees lineup the other night in the fourth inning of, beat out infield singles. That's something I think also that the Red Sox are kind of lacking is speed, is overall team speed and being able to beat out infield hits and being able to turn, go from first to third with the, exception of Betts looks awful nice rounding second base there. But overall team speed, I think they're lacking. And also, it just seems to me like, the Red Sox make too many boneheaded mistakes. And they're small things, but they add up. And, it seems like, the Yankees don't make those kind of mistakes. And those small things can also mean the difference between a first-place team and a last-place team this year in an AL East, which I agree with you. Most of these rosters are pretty close.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with your comment there about the boneheaded plays and the mistakes, but I think sometimes that's kind of a chicken and the egg thing. Once you start losing some frustration or pressing sets in, and that kind of begats more, mistakes and bonehead plays and base running errors or pressing at the plate. So sometimes the fact that they've played a little bit better the last couple of weeks, and despite that, they're still only at a four-game winning streak. And as I put on the website there a while ago, I still think this team, or almost any team in a given year, is capable of a, 6-8, 10-game winning streak. And if they ever hit one of those, I think that would kind of maybe point things in a little in the better direction, overall for them, mistakes it included. So that's why I think today's game is really important. It would be another series they would have taken. It's a two-game swing in the standings, and they after then again get the All-Star break, give them a little rest for the players who are. I mean, Hanley Ramirez has been nicked up a couple times in the first half of the year. I mean, Ortiz, you know, having to play first base a couple times recently, and that sometimes sets him back a little bit physically. So I think the 4 days off is coming at a good time, and maybe give them a chance to overcome some of those mistakes, as you mentioned, you know, starting in the with the second half. I believe they start in Anaheim. Of course, you know, that depends on Brian Johnson. Amazingly, I hate to put pressure on a guy right up out of the minor leagues, but he could be a key guy. If he comes up and performs anywhere in the general vicinity of what Eduardo Rodriguez has done, that gives the rotation a pretty good boost. But still going to need at least one more body for sure.
Right. So we're down to about 4 minutes left here remaining in this episode, Deacon. I got some questions remaining. I'll kind of fire at you here in more of a rapid fire format here.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
Let's say the season ended today and the Sox grabbed one of the wild card spots and they were going to play a one game wild card playoff game. Who's the Red Sox starter?
Eduardo Rodriguez.
I would agree.
Unless Buckholz turns out to miss like 2 weeks and comes back, but I would say Eduardo Rodriguez.
True. As we stand today, we got to say Ed Rod, which is pretty amazing.
Yes.
for the rookie. Dustin Pedroia, he's going to be back after the All-Star break. The team has kind of taken off in his absence, which I don't think those two things are related necessarily. I think Pedroia's having a great season. But the team has taken off in his absence. So when he comes back, do they drop Pedroia down to seventh in the batting order? Should they do that? Will they do that? And would Pedroia accept that?
I think probably no to almost all of those. I think initially they'll put him back either, I would say hitting second. I started to say second or third, but I think Bogaerts has cemented the third spot. They'll put him at second. If for some reason that doesn't seem to work, I think they would consider moving him down later, but I think you'll see him right back in the second hole in the batting order when he comes back. And Brock Holt
will
push down.
Seem to be willing to go with three right-handed hitters in the first three spots of the order?
I think they'll leave it Betts, Pedroia, Bogaerts.
All right. You know, if it were up to me, I'd hit Pedroia seventh. You know, I'd have a serious talk with him that the team is humming along just as it is. The Betts, Holt, Bogaerts, 1-2-3 hitters have really been the catalyst of this winning streak, really. And I wouldn't want to mess with that. I'd tell Pedroia, look, we're bringing it back, and you're hitting seventh. Now, kind of related to that is Brock Holt and what to do with him when Pedroia comes back. You know, you have Diazza playing so well. You have Victorino back now in the outfield spot. Really, I guess what's left is to make Brock Holt your everyday first baseman and do something with Mike Napoli, you know, and kind of say, time's up, big guy, you're done. Do you think the Red Sox will get rid of Mike Napoli and make Brock Holt the everyday first baseman?
I think short term, when Pedroia comes back, that yes, first base is where Holt goes, but I also think they continue to move him around, Holt that is, move him around to various positions, giving different guys a day off here and there. But I think he'll play first base more than anywhere in the short term. I don't expect Mike Napoli to be on this team much beyond August 1st. He just doesn't seem to show any signs.
You see them trying to trade him for a bag of balls or just DFAing him?
I think they'll be able to trade him for just about what you just said, yes. One team name that I keep hearing mentioned that would take him, but I'm not sure if Red Sox would do it, is Tampa Bay. Would they gamble on sending him there and having him come to life the last 2 months? But I think they'll do one of the – I just don't see how they justify him taking up a roster spot going forward. It just, you know, his defense now seems to be declining. It's unfortunate because, you know, love Mike Napoli. He was one of the big reasons they won 2 years ago. But he's looking like Kevin Youkilis looked a couple, 3 years ago, like he's hit the end all of a sudden.
That's right. That's a pretty good comp. He's 2 for his last 24, even after his several days off to collect himself this week. Hasn't seemed to have had any impact this weekend against the Yankees. He hit into a double play in a big spot last night with runners on. Just seems to be done. That about wraps up our episode today here. Deacon, thanks for joining me. Had a great time.
Thank you, Brandon. Great job as always.
All right. We'll be talking to you soon. been the Red Sox Maniacs podcast. Till next time, Brandon DeCunard saying go Sox.